Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And did you hear that the country now has a national strategy for financial literacy? Seriously, this has been in the works since 2003, and we'll have to wait to see if it's successful in teaching Americans the basics about money, credit, and saving. Could have used it before 2008, don't you think? But here at the Brian Lehrer Show, we're starting our own financial literacy curriculum. Over the coming months, we will look at what we need to know about money and things financial, from checking accounts to the stock market and beyond. And to kick it off, we'll be joined on Thursdays this month by Deyanira Del Rio, Associate Director of the nonprofit Neighborhood Economic Development Advocacy Project, known as NEDAP. NEDAP focuses on issues of economic justice, and part of that includes training sessions for community groups. Deyanira Del Rio has led many of those sessions, and she will walk us through some basics on some selected particular things. Today we'll talk about banking, including why so many New Yorkers actually don't have bank accounts. So Deyanira, thanks for doing this series with us, and welcome to WNYC.
Thanks for having me.
And the first question on your website is, what is money? Do we really need to start there?
Well, so we do start that exercise with people just to get the conversation started about why is financial education important, what is money, and why is it important to learn how to manage that well, and also to learn our rights in the financial system, the financial services system. That's something that we do in our trainings. It's not just about financial literacy, but about teaching financial justice, helping people navigate the increasingly complicated banking system in a way that's safe and affordable to them.
And listeners, let's take calls on the banking system right now for Deyanira for about the next 10 minutes, particularly if you don't have a regular bank account. Call us right now at 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Since regular savings accounts pay 0.1% interest anymore, maybe you might as well keep it under the mattress anyway. But if you don't have a regular bank account, tell us why not. If you use check cashing services or credit unions or have found another alternative by choice or by necessity, let us know a little bit about your story, and you can ask Deyanira any question that you may have that may help you to navigate your own money. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Do you know roughly how many New Yorkers don't have what we consider regular bank accounts?
Yeah, actually, New York City did a study recently, and they estimated that more than 825,000, I believe, New Yorkers don't have any sort of bank account at all. And that doesn't include large numbers of people who actually have an account, maybe a basic savings account, but are still using other fringe and more expensive and sometimes predatory institutions like check cashers and pawn shops, in addition to having that savings account.
And what are the reasons that people fall into that for the most part?
Well, there's a lot of different reasons that people may not have a bank account or maybe turning to this sort of second tier, inferior, more expensive set of financial services. Our organization, like many others, has worked on financial justice issues for a long time. One of the major fundamental barriers that people face to fair banking access is the practice of redlining by banking institutions, which is nothing new, but it continues to this day, where banks do a poorer job of serving low-income communities and communities of color by not providing bank branches, failing to provide loans that people need. And what happens in those communities is that people are forced to turn to this growing wave of predatory and high-cost actors that have filled the void, essentially, over the past decade
banks. And is it still growing? Why would something like a check-cashing place stay in business? Couldn't somebody just, you know, take the subway to a neighborhood that has more banks and open a regular account?
Sure, some people can do that. We work with a lot of groups that work with seniors and people with disabilities and others that, you know, where folks don't have that option to travel. And also, traveling to have to do your banking adds to the cost of your banking in a very major way, especially as MTA fares are going up. But, you know, we've sort of, you know, that I think that fundamental barrier of not having any physical branch that you can walk into to open an account is really a major one. And so people are having to turn to check cashers and paying almost 2% of every check that they cash there. You know, essentially hundreds, even thousands of dollars of people's wages are going each year to pay just to cash their own paychecks or to pay their basic bills, having to buy money orders or do other bill pay. And that's money that people could save, especially in these really difficult financial times, if they have an affordable bank account or credit union account.
Phil in Sayville, you're on WNYC. Hello, Phil.
Hi, love the show.
You
know, I got to say that banks have used me as a punching bag over the years. The fact of the matter is that even when you have a decent income, the fees that they charge for over limit, you know, I'm paying 25% because I'm a B credit. I'm paying 25% interest on a installment loan. You know, I borrowed $5,000 to go on a vacation with my 80-year-old mother with my family. In order to pay that loan back, they're charging me 25% interest because even though I own a home and we have an income over $100,000, we're a B credit,
right,
and that's the way it is.
Phil, thank you, and good luck to you.
Yeah, I'm glad that we got that call. I mean, like I said at the beginning, there's a lot of basic barriers in the banking system themselves, and it's not just about redlining and not having branches available, but even if there are banks available, some of the products and services and their practices are increasingly difficult and sometimes predatory. So one of the things that the caller just mentioned were these really egregious overdraft fees. So, you know, you slip up once and write a check for more than you can cover in your account, or you use your debit card to, you know, purchase, swipe, you know, at the store to get a cup of coffee or lunch. We hear these stories all the time. And by going over a couple of dollars, you can actually trigger all of these really huge overdraft fees of $30, $40. And you don't know that these fees are being charged in many cases. The bank kind of slips these in. They don't give you the option of choosing whether you want this feature on your account. And so people end up paying hundreds of dollars in fees that they have to repay to the bank. And when you don't pay it back, you can sometimes have your account closed by the bank. The bank reports you to these databases like check systems. And people are actually shunted out of the banking system often by these kinds of practices. So whereas in the past, having a bank account, we could say for most people, was the more affordable option, over the recent years, it's increasingly become more complicated to say that because of these landmines that are, you know, embedded in a lot of accounts. And there are new protections, by the way, federal protections that are going to improve that for customers.
In the Dodd-Frank bill, and we'll go over those maybe in subsequent weeks. But Esther in Rockland, you're on WNYC. Hi, Esther.
Hi. I do have a bank account, but I'm aware of people who do not have bank accounts because their Social Security number doesn't match anything else about them, and it becomes problematic.
What does that mean? Are they illegal immigrants with fake Social Security numbers, or what are you referring to?
I'm not really sure what their motivation is, except that I hear that people who I know well do not want to use a banking system because if they use a banking system with a Social Security number that's attached to their name, part of their income gets immediately garnished.
Deadbeat dads, maybe? Dayanira, does any of this sound familiar? You're furrowing
your
brow.
Well, there's a couple of things that she could be referring to. So one thing is, in the case of immigrants, you know, there are a lot of, you know, New York City is a city of immigrants. 40% of the population is immigrant. And a lot of immigrants may not have Social Security numbers or two forms of U.S. identification that many banks require. The law under the banking law to open bank accounts actually states, just so people know, that if you don't have a Social Security number, you are able to provide banks are able to accept other forms of identification numbers, such as an IRS-issued individual taxpayer ID number, the number from your passport or other government-issued ID. So the identification issue, if someone doesn't have a Social Security number, doesn't automatically disqualify them from opening accounts. It'll vary bank by bank or credit union by credit union. In terms of garnishing wages or anything like that, there is a misperception that a lot of people have that when you put money into a bank account, it's going to get automatically taxed. And that usually is not the case because you're actually getting your taxes deducted by your employer or you're paying them separately. So interest on your account does get taxed.
Let's get one more in here before we run out of time for today in this series. But Ron in Dutchess County, you're on WNYC. Hey, Ron.
Hey, good morning, Brian. I'm just, you know, dissatisfied with banks and really haven't used banks for about 25 years now. been doing business exclusively with credit unions, and that's due to the fact that the fees that credit unions charge are generally way cheaper than that of banks. Interest rates on loans, and generally the interest rates that they pay on savings accounts and CDs are slightly higher than that of banks.
Ron, I have to leave it there because we're running out of time. But do you agree with him on all of that? And who's eligible? We always hear nice things about credit unions. Who's eligible for credit unions?
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And he kind of stole my thunder there, because that was going to be my major point here, is that a lot of people are disillusioned by banks, with banks, because of these, you know, hidden gotcha fees that people have been hit with because of the economic crisis, which has been largely caused by the bank's practices. So people may have, you know, practical financial reasons for not wanting to use banks, as well as their own sort of philosophical reasons about where they want to put their money and what kind of institutions they want to support. So as the caller said, the credit unions, the reason they're able to charge lower fees and offer better interest rates is that they're not for profit, unlike banks, which are for profit. The other things that make them distinct from banks are that they are cooperatively owned. So that means when you join, you become not a customer, but you're a member slash owner. You're actually a shareholder. And that means you have a say in how that credit union is run, and voting for the board of directors, for example, that sets the policies of the credit union. So each credit union has a different, you asked who can join a credit union. In New York City, we're actually pretty fortunate that we have a lot of different community development credit unions, which are very local and dedicated to reinvesting in New York communities, that most New Yorkers should be able to join a credit union.
And we have to leave that there for today with Deyanira Del Rio from NEDAP. She'll be with us every Thursday this month in our series, Money You. Great start. So informative about banks and non-bank. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for having me.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.